Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Smart Faith Podcast, coming to you from the middle of nowhere in West Texas. My name is Joe Sis. You can email me, smartfaithpodcast@yahoo.com. Definitely check out revelationsradionetwork.com for all your podcast needs. Got some great stuff on that website. Before we start today, I want to talk a little bit about my absence. I've been gone for about a year. I never meant to really step away from the microphone for that long. I just kind of got in a situation where I was really in a deep depression and had to deal with the emotional issues that I was going through at the time. I have been diagnosed as bipolar by the mental health community, and I seem to have what's considered a fairly severe case of it. I have a lot of problem with depression. I have some problem with mania too, but I have a lot of problems with depression. And there's a lot of times that I'm pulled away, and there's been some times, even in the past since this podcast started, that I have done, that I've taken breaks because of some problems with my emotional health. Now, I know a lot of you are against pharmaceuticals and big pharmacy companies and drug companies and pharmakia and all that, and that's a really interesting discussion. We're going to get into it one of these days in a different episode, but I want to report that as of right now, I am not only seeking physical advice, you know, like seeing a psychiatrist and taking care of all that business, but I'm also seeking spiritual advice from my pastor and, trying to keep myself centered with God. I know there's more to mental illness than just the physical component. There's more to most things than just the physical component. We live in a world where spiritual warfare is happening all around us. Excuse me. As the book of Ephesians tells us, among one place among many, that we got this issue going around. You know, I think about Legion in the Bible and how Jesus healed him with a exorcism. You know, a modern person today would probably think he had a dissociative identity disorder, or what we used to call multiple personalities, or schizophrenia, or whatever, and would have treated him accordingly. But Jesus saw that there was a spiritual component to this man's problem and took care of it in that manner. So what I'm basically what I'm saying is I am under the care of both physical medicine and spiritual leadership. So, I mean, led by the Spirit, by pastors and elders and deacons and so forth. So, and that's what's going on. But basically, I got into the situation where I was in this big funk, and I had to step away from the podcast because it was just too much for me to handle. And, it's really hard. There's a lot of changes that happen, a lot of things still going on. I know I've been ranting about this for a year now, but, or for 2 years, but I mean, it is, a big thing that's happened, and I'm really still kind of coming to terms with it. I don't bounce back as fast as most people. I seem to have a harder time with change in my life. Change is something I don't take very well. So, it's been kind of catching up with me, and I have questions about the future, about what I'm going to do with myself, the limitations that are placed on me by some of the physical problems I have and some of the mental issues I deal with. So, I have all these things going on, and I just got overwhelmed and got depressed and just got out of touch with things. And it's really easy sometimes to forget about God, that He's there and He's holding you and walking you through all this. And it's really easy to get down on yourself and lose your way. And it's real easy to get off in the darkness. And that's what happened to me. So I got off in the darkness. But I'm coming back to my senses. The good Lord has always stood by me, and He continues to stand by me. And I have faith that He always will, because He said so. In the Bible, He tells us He won't forsake us. He's not going to turn His back on us. If we are true to Him and our beliefs and all that, we have Him to reside in, to rest on, to take solace from, to take comfort in. And, I'm just really trying to draw back to a relationship with God so I can do those things, so I can, let go and not have to take it all on my own shoulders and try to deal with it. So, every night has a dawn, and the dawn is breaking. And, it's still dark outside for me. It really is. Still is dark. So I'm still dealing with some issues. So if I don't podcast as often as, on a real regular rate, that's probably what's going on with me. So I'm still dealing with the issues that have been plaguing me and dogging me for a while now. But that's basically where I've been. The good Lord is blessing me with the vision to come out of this problematic time in my life, I believe. And it's been a journey. It really has. And I want to thank you guys for all your support and love and prayers. I would ask you to continue to pray for me if you have a prayer to spare. I would definitely appreciate it. And to just thank you for being there. I really just want to be, I'm so grateful for you guys even listening and taking the time to humor an old man like me and his misuse of a microphone. So, that's just definitely where we're at. So we're getting back into it. We're going to start doing some things. I have lots of ideas I want to tackle on the podcast. There's so much room to talk about so many things, and there's so much more we can cover all the time. There's so into what we can learn from the Bible and what we can learn from the world around us and the issues that we face on a daily basis. There's just so much that God speaks to us in and through that, we have material for now to the end of time, to really get down to it. So, let's get talking about God a little bit here. Today's episode is called Between the Sheets, and I want to give a warning. This does have mature content. We're going to be talking about grown-up stuff here. So if you're not into that kind of thing, don't want to mess with that kind of thing, you might want to skip the episode, because we're going to be talking a lot about sex. We're going to be talking primarily about sex. So there's your disclaimer. If you want to pop on over and check out a podcast on the Revelations Radio Network, I don't blame you, but that's where we're at. So let's get into it. We're going to be addressing an issue that faces the Christian community as a whole, and more specifically, the community of single Christians. And this affects the community as a whole because of the behavior of the single community, the people who are Christian and claim to be single, or claim to be Christian and are single, I guess would be a better way to put it, affects all of us as a whole because of the fact that, people judge us by the actions of all of our different others. And a lot of these things, happen in the singles community is reflective of all Christianity. People look at that and say, well, that represents all Christians. And now, do I want to be a part of that? Do I want to condemn that? Whatever. But, we have a highly visible group of people in the singles community that is, important because of the fact that many others are looking towards these people. A lot of times you look around, people are looking towards, what is the youth doing? Okay, claim to be Christian, okay, that's fine. Grandma sitting in the front row of the front pew of the church yelling amen every other line, hey, that's great. But you want to see the true measure of faith? Let's look to the young ones. Let's look to the teenagers, the 20-year-old, young adults, the 30-year-old group. Let's look at them. What are they doing? Are they living a Christian life? Are they committing to the values that they preach? Or are they being hypocrites? And a lot of people will identify more with this younger group because it's closer to their age group, or, they have, they're more active. A lot of times you see young people that right now it's a real common thing to grow up in this whole church community type thing and or claims of religion and still be acting a fool on the other times, when you're not at church or whatever. It's real common for that to happen, So, yeah, we're going to be talking about sex, as it's a prominent problem for us. We talk about it because it's something that is important from this perspective of God's Word, and we cannot just seem to get it right. Sex is used, abused, mistreated, and misunderstood, and it's time to sort through it as much as possible. God's command on sex are quite clear, and they're there for a good reason. We're going to examine some of those reasons in our discussion today so that we might have a better grip on where sex belongs in our lives. This episode was inspired by a survey I happened to stumble across from the dating site ChristianMingle.com. They're the one that runs the commercials on the TV all the time. If you ever happen to hear one of those, you probably know what I'm talking about. But it's a website for Christian singles to get together and find other people of faith to date and eventually marry you and all that. So that's what it's there for. And this survey stated that some 61% of professing Christians on the website are willing to have premarital sex. Think about that for a minute. 61%. That's more than half are willing to have premarital sex. That figure floored me. I really was expecting a survey with much lower results. Now, that being said, I know a lot of people that say they aren't partaking actually are, but I was surprised that over half surveyed were willing to state openly that they're willing to commit what the Bible clearly condemns as sinful. You know, that's a real problem here. We have a whole bunch of people saying, you know, over half the people surveyed said, yeah, I'll sin. Bring it on. Let me at it. And that's where the whole thing started. And then that's where it floors me, and that's where it gets me angry. Now, the true spiritual state of those that would answer that they are willing to commit sin might be questionable, as being faithful is to be obedient. But I don't know their hearts myself. Okay, so let's get this out of the way first. The first disclaimer I want to put on this particular discussion is that is between them and God. Their spiritual disposition is between them and God. So we're going to roll on the supposition that they are in good spiritual health outside of this particular question. We all do wrong. We all sin. We all have our issues to deal with, the crosses to bear, what have you. No one is perfect. So before we dismiss people out of hand and try to throw down some judgment on them, we have to be sure ourselves are in order. What I'm saying is that we don't need to judge, to throw into question anyone's salvation or spiritual state when we have ample room to address the issue at hand. Okay? Instead of yelling that anyone that has sex is going to hell, okay, and that these people are fake, that these are the wolves among the sheep, that these are the terrible people, the left-hand path people, the people God, Jesus is going to say, depart from me, I knew you not. Instead of automatically declaring these people to be that group, we should take the time to look at what's going on. Because you don't know. No one knows except for God and them what's going on with them in the spiritual department. Except for you will know them by their fruits. And you know the fruits is obvious things. You know, patience, love, joy, kindness, meekness, all that wrapped up in one. But the point is that these people are willing to go sin. It does speak to their judgment, but it doesn't necessarily speak to, we cannot just say, get away from me. You know, we can't do that. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. We need to address the question because the question is important. The issue is important. Not dismissing people out of hand. Oh, you're not a Christian. You're just a faker. You know, that's real easy, ain't it? That's real easy. And it gets us nowhere. So I'm trying my best not to play a holier-than-thou card on this subject, because I'm a low-down sinner myself many times over. I've seen that many that come to this topic come to it with a kind of superior attitude, claiming judgment for themselves, never once looking at their own sins and issues. The Bible says, you know, before you take the speck out of your brother's eye, you need to get the, you know, log out of your own. We need to take care of our own business first. Now, we can't turn our backs on problematic issues that are being, you know, bandied about in our society today. We can't do that. We need to address the sin. We need to take care of that. But we don't need to denounce the sinner necessarily, because if all sinners, you know, if you denounce this group of sinners, you know, what's to say that any other group of sinners shouldn't be denounced as well? And then, hey, we've all sinned, you know, Romans 3:23, for all have sinned, fallen short of the glory of God. Hey, guess what? We all need to be denounced then. So let's get it right and get these people straight and you know, spiritual correctness, get some spiritual correction going on over the issue, and not so much name-calling, mudslinging, holier-than-thou, superior judgments. We don't need all that. All right, so I'm trying my hardest here not to throw rocks at people particularly, because I live in a house with a lot of glass in it myself. But the issue itself is important to understand. All right, the first point we need to understand is sex itself. Is it for procreation? Is it inherently bad or dirty? Why are Christians so hung up on it? Why talk about it all the time? Are Christians sexually repressed? Is there any other options besides marriage or abstinence? Well, to start off with, sex is not only for procreation. Sex is a gift given to mankind by God Himself. This is obvious because it feels good. It's a part of the bonding process. We're going to talk a lot about that today. That humans undertake with each other. And because He could have made sex completely mundane, is still giving us the drive to procreate. Very possible. You know, it happens in the animal kingdom all the time. You have all kinds of animals that have reproduction methods that are not sexually pleasing. I would assume, I've never been a frog, but I don't assume, you know, swimming up to a clutch of unfertilized eggs and releasing my sperm with, you know, and the female not being anywhere around, you know, she's long gone by now. After laying the clutch of eggs and me doing my thing, I don't imagine that's like a sexually gratifying experience for the frog, is if, you know, if we look at it from a human point of view. You know, no intimacy, no, they don't even see each other. They're not even the same bond, probably. They're probably in different bonds by then, you know? So, I mean, God could very well set up the situation to where procreation was not the exceptional experience that it is today, and still make us have a drive to procreate and be fruitful and multiply. Because, like I said, there are animals that do. Okay? If God didn't intend for sex to be shared intimately between man and wife, he wouldn't have set it up that way. When sex is executed properly, and when is it executed properly? What are the requirements for proper execution, absolute flawless execution of the sexual act? It needs to be between a virgin couple, both partners, you know, both partners, no sex before marriage, that do get married and respect each other, love each other, and respond to each other's physical and emotional needs. And once you do that, if you can get it that right, it's beautiful. It is a human work of art. It is it's beauty written in flesh. You know, born out by love and it's just it's an awesome thing. It really is. It's an awesome thing. When God, sex is done, as God pronounced it as he wanted it to be, he blesses it and it works. Sex promotes a healthy mental attitude and also promotes a healthy marriage when done properly. With respect and love and understanding for each other and all that, it promotes healthy marriages. It is a bond. And while marriage can survive without intimacy due to things like injury, disease, old age, what have you, there are all kinds of things that can cause problems with your sex life. And you can't have a relationship without partaking in what we would consider a normal sex life. It's not something that's absolutely required. But it is something that is, it's a boon. It's an advantage to have when it's done right. You know, and it's, like I said, it's one of those type of things, it's a glue, it's a bond. So sex is not just for procreation. It serves another purpose between man and wife other than the production of children. It is the fulfilling of man's need for intimacy. And we all have needs to be close to people. No man is an island. No one is out there alone. We all have that need to bond with people. We are social creatures. That is just the way it is. So, we need to get that idea that sex is not just something done to produce children. It should be an emotionalist and detached act. It's not like that at all. You know, if it's just to procreate, then, it doesn't matter what the other person feels. It doesn't matter to attending to, emotional and physical needs. It doesn't matter like that. As long as you get the job done and the baby is produced, that's all that matters in that situation. And I believe sex to be much more than just a piece in the factory of baby making. So there's nothing bad or dirty about sex, like I just said. There's only sin. Sexual sin is a problem, but sex done right is perfectly fine. Sin happens when sex is improperly used. Think of sex as a gun. When used properly, it can be a huge amount of fun, but there are safety rules that apply. If you ignore the rules, you are in danger. With a gun, you are in mortal danger, as you could end up shooting someone if you don't pay attention. Same goes with sex. If you don't obey the rules, you're in emotional and spiritual danger, as sex will bring on heartache and other sorrows if not properly handled. God gave us sex, so it is good as long as it's done properly. We as Christians are so hung up, so to speak, on sex because it is so brazenly abused and misused in our society today. To go back to our gun analogy, we are in a place where people are walking around with their guns drawn and randomly firing in all directions. That's a great way to get shot. Sex is being flung about as though it's nothing, and because of it, people are getting hurt. We as Christians do not want to see our fellow man hurt. We are commanded to love our neighbors, and that means looking out for them. If someone was being reckless with a weapon, you want them to come to their senses and restrain themselves before someone got hurt, wouldn't you? You would be trying your best to get through to them. Tell them, hey man, don't do that. You're going to hurt yourself, you're going to hurt somebody else. You know, something's going to go wrong here if you're just wildly walking around, jumping about, doing cartwheels, firing a gun all at the same time. You know, you got problems. You know, you don't need to do that. Okay? Christians are just trying to get people to put their proverbial guns away, and that's no pun intended there. But it's basically what we're trying to do. We're trying to get a leash on the thing. We talk about sex because sex is in our face and in our lives all the time. We're in a society that is flooded with sexual imagery and pressures to do what God has labeled a sin. I mean, look at your TV commercials nowadays. There are TV commercials out there for, you know, for products that 30 seconds long, the first 28 seconds is nothing but sexual content. Or a woman, you know, beautiful woman. Oh my gosh. Oh, you know, want me, desire me. I'm a sexual icon to be lusted after. You know, in 28 seconds of, oh, running down the beach with, you know, body parts bouncing around and doing the Baywatch thing and all that. I don't mean to be graphic. I'm sorry. I really am. But, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. It's, oh, look at me. I'm so sexy. You know, 28 seconds, the last 2 seconds, Pepsi. You know, it's like, what does that one have to do with Pepsi? Yeah, I mean, you know, yeah, I lifted that kind of off of a comedian, but it's a true thing. It really is. You see these commercials that are all about sex, that are about, you know, underwear commercials, perfume commercials are especially bad, it seems like. Like the ones that come to my mind, Aqua du Jour and all that, or whatever it's called. But I mean, you have all this sex just being thrust down our throats. You know, and it's we have to fight back as much as possible, lest we'd be drowned in all the smut. We can't even stick our heads in the sand anymore because the hole is full of sex, too. There's nowhere to go to get away from it. It is part of society, and it's something that we have to face. Our job as Christians is not to run away from the world. Our job as Christians is to walk through the world as an example, as Christ was an example for us. We are to walk through this world pointing to Him, not hide from it, and cower from the devil and his ways. You know, we are supposed to walk through the valley of the shadow of death, not run and sit in the corner and weep. So you can't just say, oh, well, ignore it and it'll go away. No, we need to attack it head on. We need to say, hey, no, don't do that. It's not good. Okay, so if it seems like Christians rave about sex, it's because sex slaps us upside the head on a daily basis. And when you see it over and over again, day in and day out, you gotta have a problem with it. It's going to get to you. And you need to stand up and say, hey, I'm not putting up with this anymore. We're not going to take it. You know, we're not going to take it anymore. We don't want this in our society, in our lives. And we don't want this for our children. We want things to be better. So all we can do is lay out God's word and say, here's how it works. Let me tell you about the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees. You know, and let me tell you about how it's done right. Let me tell you how you go from the start to win, you know, and not mess up. You know, let me tell you how to avoid the pitfalls. Let me tell you where the potholes are on the road that is called sex. Let me tell you where the road goes and how to drive down it so that you can have the best possible experience and arrive where you want to go completely safely and as fast as possible. You know, there's, you know, we all have a sexual odyssey, sexual voyage that we go through in our life. We call it our sex life or whatever. You know, but we need to know how to navigate this part of ourselves efficiently and in a godly fashion. That's what I want to do today. I want to say, hey, this is how it works. So that's why we get onto it, because it is everywhere. Christians are not sexually repressed. That's another myth that comes up a lot that I want to deal with. We are sexually intelligent. We understand sex in a way that can only come from the power that created it. God gave us an instruction manual on sex. And well, we've read it. And that's what we follow. There's nothing repressed about loving someone. What is so repressed about love? Nothing. And being true to someone is even more admirable. There's nothing repressed about loyalty. Loyalty is not a horrible emotion. Loyalty is something to be condoned. Something to look up on. And there's nothing wrong with giving yourself over to that one, that single person that you're going to be with all your life. There's no repression in the act of respect. Respect is not a repressive emotion either, or a repressive ideal either. Think about it. Waiting for sex until marriage, you are showing your future spouse respect by being faithful even before you technically had to. You know, you're being faithful before you even meet him. That's almost like a faith issue. You know, we believe in Jesus, though we haven't met him yet. You know, I hadn't come down and said, "Hey, hi, how I'm doing? I'm Jesus. Let's go." You know, but we know he's coming. That's the way you should look at your spouse situation. If you're a young person, never been married, look at your spouse like you look at Jesus in that aspect. And I'm not saying do it in an idolatrous way. I'm not saying put your future spouse, this person that's coming, above God or anything like that. But what I'm saying is think about it like Jesus. You know, you haven't met Jesus, but you believe in him and you're going to be faithful to him because you know he's coming. You know one day it's going to be worth it. Well, your spouse is coming. You're going to find that person someday. You know, odds are most everybody finds, you know, somebody. You know, I mean, I guess there's a few people that never get married or whatever, but for the most part, we're all going to find somebody. We're all going to find a lover and a partner and a spouse and all that in our lives. So why not be faithful now? Even though you haven't seen them yet, you haven't met them yet, you know they're coming. And it'll be worth the wait. You know, we live in a hedonistic society that's all about give it to me now. You know, and to hell with the consequences. But think about it. Is it not better to respect ourselves and our mate even before we meet them? I say that's intelligent. I say it's intelligent to understand that they're coming and that it's okay to be, to cool off and not get all excited and just, you know, take your time and wait for them. Not only that, but there is no repression in general when it comes to sex and the institution of marriage. I'm not going to be graphic, or trying my best not to be graphic, and discuss the mechanics of sex because we all understand these things. We all know about all that. What happens between a man and wife behind closed doors in consensual execution is their business. There is ample room for sexual gratification and exploration between husband and wife. And that's about as detailed as I want to get. There are certain rules that apply in the situation to, some of the more outlandish practices that are cropping up in our society that we have to have a problem with. But for the most part, in the range of normal activities that a husband and wife, the lovers may partake in, well, that's your business. Okay, as long as you're not committing adultery, as long as you're not hurting anybody else, as long as you're not doing, it's just, there's plenty of room to be fulfilled in that situation. You know? So there's no repression in the form of it has to be a certain way, a certain time, a certain date, in a certain room, in a certain place. You know, there's no rules like that. The rules is love each other, respect each other, take care of each other, and all that. We'll just discuss some more rules here in a minute. All right, but there's nothing repressed about that. So I don't know how to really put it any more than that, besides saying that that's how it goes. Now, is there any other option besides abstinence or marriage? Let's move on to that. To put it bluntly, no. There's no having your cake and eating it too, so to speak. You don't want to put in the work of building a relationship and then a marriage, then you don't get the reward of sexual activity. If you're not married, then no dancing, okay? Back to our guns. If you don't learn how to shoot it safely, then you have to leave your gun in the holster. Sex is just a gift is given to man, but one that requires maturity and wisdom before unwrapping it. Otherwise, you're just going to shoot your eye out. All right, let's look at some scripture here. What does God say directly about sex, man, and marriage? First off, God declares sexuality as perfectly normal, positive, and beneficial within the confines of marriage in Hebrews 13, verse 4. Marriage is honorable in all, and the bed undefiled. The whoremongers and adulterers God will judge. Now, sex within the confines of marriage does not defile the bed. In other words, sex in marriage is acceptable, perfectly acceptable, condoned in God's view. A healthy sex life is something God wants us to have within the framework of His plan for mankind, which is marriage to one person of the opposite gender and one person only for life. The problem comes in when we work outside of God's rules. sex outside of marriage is condemned is just as randomly firing guns condemned in society. Go to the gun range, where it's, you know, some, where it's condoned, where it's practiced properly, where everything's taken care of, the rules are followed, and shooting is just fine. All things in their proper place. Marriage is a natural state for men to be in. Genesis 2:24 says, therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. We are joined to our spouses and make a life with them on this earth. This includes sexual relationships with that spouse. Once married, the bed is undefiled, and we're good to go. Notice, too, that this also, as an aside, puts the kibosh on divorce. There are several verses that do, but this one really does so dramatically. When you join together as one flesh with your spouse, this is a permanent state on earth, okay, a permanent mortal state. You know, it says in, later on that, you know, we're not getting married or given into marriage and what's to come hereafter. But on earth, it is until death, and that's what it means. To lose any part of your flesh is a traumatic and debilitating event. Don't believe me? Cut off an arm or a leg and see how much your life changes. How hard it is to adapt to your new condition, how much it hurts, both physically and mentally, to be without that part of you. Divorce is tearing apart one's flesh back into two fleshes. This is more than just losing a limb. This is losing half yourself at once, shattering your whole self, actually. It is a wound that should be inflicted on no one. So you can't have divorce, because divorce is breaking a bond that is meant to be permanent. And it should be a shattering and, you know, terrible, traumatic experience. And I argue that it usually is. You know, how much we admit to it is, you know, another thing. But to improve how natural sex is in God's view of marriage, we're even given rules on sexuality. Those are some of those rules I mentioned earlier. Don't believe me about the rules? Check it out. 1 Corinthians 7:3-5. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence. And likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one another, except it be with consent for a time, that ye may give yourself to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. I can't get that word out right. Tonight, for some reason. Rendering due benevolence is another way to say take care of business. Love your wife emotionally as well as physically. And she is to love you the same, emotionally and physically. The wife has a duty to be there for her husband. The wife has a duty to be there for her husband. Get that. There's a duty. It's not just a nice thing you do. It's not something you give out of the goodness of your heart. If you're married, it's a duty. But husbands have the same duty to the wife. Now, don't withhold sex. Sex is not a weapon, folks. Get that out of your head. Sex is not something used to attack people, to punish people, or to have anything like that. Sex is not meant for that. Sex has nothing to do with that. And when we start throwing it around, this whole cut them off thing, that is not right. Now, I don't just say that because I'm a man and, you know, from some stereotypical out point that, you know, men are supposed to be, you know, really high in the libido and all that. I'm not saying it because of that. I'm saying it because the Bible says don't do that. The Bible says don't use sex like that. Sex is not meant for that. Okay, the only time you're supposed to withhold sexual relations from your spouse is for when you both agree to take a break in your sex life for things like fasting and prayer, i.e. devotion to God. Okay, put God first, take care of business there, take care of your godly business. You know, and if you need to take a break from sex to do that, then hey, that's what you do. But you do it with consent, you talk it over with your partner, you sit down and say, hey, I want to, you know, abstain from it for a little while so I can take care of some spiritual business and worship God. And after your spiritual business is taken care of, you're to resume your due benevolence. You're to resume physically and emotionally loving your spouse. So when the time of prayer is over, go back to having sex so that Satan can't tempt you with sexual sins and draw you away into adultery. Because it's better to have a wife or a husband than it is to burn in passion. burning lust. You know, so go back to your regular routine. Go back to taking care of your physical, emotional, sexual needs with your spouse. Okay, so sex is not a weapon. And the Bible itself tells us to take care of each other in that department, along with all the other departments. Physical taken care of, spiritual taken care of, emotional taken care of, all that. So God actually tells us, hey, you know, love each other. And I mean that in the literal sense. You know, love your spouse. Not everybody. Love your neighbors and all that. Love them in the spiritual sense. But when it comes to your spouse, you need to love them both in the spiritual sense and the physical sense. So take care of that. Oh, we're sexually oppressed, though, right? I mean, come on. God himself tells us to enjoy the benefits of marriage and then to partake of the marriage bed and only to break off a regular sex life to accommodate worship of him through prayers and fasting. God tells us in the Old Testament, be fruitful and multiply, which means go make love with each other, with your spouse. And God tells us in the New Testament to be together in marriage as marriage gives us the right to be. So go make love to your spouse. It seems to me that God is pro-sex. He makes it pleasurable in the first place. Gives us reasonable rules. There's nothing unreasonable about saying wait till you have a single partner in mind, that you have the one. Something unreasonable about being patient. And God encourages us to enjoy it after our patience pays off. So, you know, once that person comes into our life and we are properly married and everything's in order, hey, take off. Have fun, kids. That's Victorian indeed. We're just real Victorian, real repressed there, aren't we? It's when we get outside the rules that we have a problem. Just like shooting a gun in an unsafe manner, sex without guidelines is dangerous. Let's make this clear right here, right now. There is no such thing as casual sex. I don't want to hear anybody say that because it's stupid. It's not true. I know some of you think that's not right. You think, oh man, you don't know what you're talking about. You're just, you know, you're just not down, you're not cool, you're not with the times, you're some backwater, redneck, Bible-thumping, hillbilly person stuck in a civil war. You know, I mean, you think of me like that all you want, but let me tell you, I'm not wrong. Sexual intercourse is inherently invasive for a woman's body by the very nature of it, and is invasive spiritually and emotionally for both men and women. Yes, men are emotionally invested when it comes to sex. There's this misconception that men don't have this emotional component, if I get the word out, tied to sex, but that's a lie. That's a lie of Satan. It's a product of stereotyping of men by the world around us. Hey, another notch on the bed. You don't know. That's not how men are. Well, I'm sure there are some pigs out there that are like that, but that's not how man is intended to be. Man is intended to be emotionally invested in the act of sex itself. Shamefully, I know this from experience. Every woman I've had sex with in my life, and it's not that very many, I mean, actually not many at all compared to what I hear are normal numbers for people nowadays. I'm pretty unexperienced compared to a lot of folks. But I've had enough. I've messed up enough. I have made my, missteps in life. And every woman I've ever had sex with in my life has taken a small piece of my heart and left a scar on my emotional state. That's because sex is intended to be a bond. You know, I've said it before, I'm going to say it again before this is over. Sex is a bond. Letting it set, it's like putting glue, that is a glue that helps hold marriage together. And you know, it's one of the things that helps hold a relationship together. The marriage for life, sex is one of the many components, you know, along with, you know, physical, looking after needs, you know, financially and all that. Spiritually looking after needs, you know, worshiping God and keeping God centered in your household. And emotional needs, as in being attentive to each other's feelings. You know, sex is all part of that. It's part of that glue that holds everything together. Okay, so casual sex is like starting to form this bond, letting it set for a little while, letting the glue dry a little bit, and then ripping it off as hard as you can. I mean, as quick as you can, rip like a bandaid. It's a pain we get used to because the pleasures of sex are alluring, but it is a pain that we endure whether we admit it or not. Now, a lot of people are going to tell you in society nowadays that we don't go through this. Oh, no, casual sex is fine. Even women like casual sex. You know, I read a survey one time that said that women, if women are assured that sexual relationship is going to be fulfilling to them, that they're just as eager as men to engage in casual sex. That may be true, and if it is, well, shame on them, because it is not meant to be used that way. And I think it is an act of hedonism, an act of Satan himself, that we are looking away from those feelings you get when you do something you shouldn't do. You know, we are if there's any repression going on with sex, it's a repression of guilt afterwards. And if any of you are like me, maybe I'm a weirdo, maybe I'm strange, I don't know, but I've had, you know, a single one-night stand in my life, and I feel horrible about it. I feel like I hurt that girl. I feel like I hurt myself. I feel like I let God down. You know, I don't think, if casual sex was something that was possible and was no big deal, I don't think I'd have those feelings. It's kind of the point not to have those feelings. You have to train yourself out of those feelings. And I don't think you ever get out of them completely. I think you just mask them and hide them and move the pain to other parts of your life and try to pretend like that pain never happened in your love life, that the casual sex isn't actually what's hurting you. You know, you try to take your casual sex issues, the pain that's developing it from the emotional trauma you're doing to yourself and the spiritual trauma, and all that you're doing to yourself by not being with the one you love, and, you know, put it on mommy issues. Take that pain and say, oh, no, we're going to blame mom for not raising us right. Or daddy issues. Excuse me, didn't know it was about to be. Or daddy issues. You know, oh, you know, my daddy didn't do this, my daddy didn't do that, blah, blah, blah. You know, we take this pain and try to shuffle it off into other directions. So we mask it and we don't realize, and we don't let ourselves realize that our hedonistic attitudes towards sex is what's causing us to hurt. Opening yourself up through sex is an intimate act. It leaves you vulnerable on many levels. When you don't stay with the one you had sex with, you lose something of yourself and ultimately cheapen sex in general. I know many of you have heard varying versions of this analogy, but it's a good one. Sex is like a box of chocolates. Every single piece of them chocolates you give away, you can never ever get back. If you throw those chocolates away willy-nilly, then you're not going to have much to share with that one person that when you do find them, you want to spend the rest of your life with. How much more special would it be to present that person with the gift of every last chocolate you have when you marry them? Wouldn't it be better than giving them a box of sloppy, picked-over, half-eaten, scattering, and mully-grub, saliva-drenched, spit-soaked nastiness in a box? You don't want to give them that. You don't want to give them a box with all the good candy Hillary ate up and the bad candy licked. Or half eaten and spit up, and half chewed and stuck to the side of the box, and, you know, picked over and half melted. And you don't want to, no. That's, you don't want to do that. Sex is something that we cannot take as being casual, no matter what society tells us. Think about it. Everyone you've ever had sex with has an intimate knowledge of you and who you are on an emotional level. They don't even have to know your name, but they know who you are. There's something that is interchanged between us when we have sex that speaks to who we are, speaks to our vulnerabilities, and, you know, communicates a lot. If even if you can't quantify it with words, it still communicates a knowledge. Even that one-night stand includes an exchange of knowledge between the parties involved. This is a problem because sex is like a secret meant for a certain person. And when we share that secret with anyone else, we're proverbially letting the cat out of the bag. There is somehow a removal of value from the secret with the more people that are included in it. A secret isn't a secret anymore if you told half the town already. You gotta save the secret. Save your chocolate and share them only with the one intended for you for life. Find a spouse, marry for life, and understand the joy that is respect and nourishing relationship that you can have with a God-centered marriage and what that can bring you in your sex life. Believe me, it is better to remain celibate during your time being single and enjoy the benefits of marriage at the proper time than it is to dirty and dilute sex now and go into marriage scarred, jaded, and well tainted. Don't pay attention to the world around you saying because, you know, what they're saying, because the world is wrong. In our culture, premarital sex is expected and even condoned. I knew a girl when I was, I don't know, it was about 15 years ago. And we worked together, and she's a little bit younger than me, but she's like 18 at the time. I was in my 20s, or almost in my, well, yeah, I was in my 20s, early 20s. And me and her dated for a little bit, or just, I don't know if I call it dating. We saw each other, we're friends, and she had a crush on me like you wouldn't believe. And, you know, I thought she was cute too, but, you know, I'm being a man, you know, in the throes of mania that I was in at the time, and being not God-centered in my life at the time, I was overtaken by hormones, to put it nicely. And, you know, I pressured her for things that she didn't want to do, and, you know, I didn't treat her properly. You know, I am ashamed for that, but that is one of the mistakes I did. But the interesting thing about it was is she refused me that step. She refused me that escalation of the relationship. And I thought it was unusual. And a lot of people that, you know, were privy to the information about her thought it was unusual as well. You know, 18-year-old girl that's a virgin. What? You know, how? That's what? That's wow. And wants to remain a virgin until marriage? That's inconceivable. Now, how do you do that? You know, what's something's wrong with that girl, right? We live in a society where that would be considered weird. You know, she was 28, the last I heard, before she was in the situation to change that status, I guess you could say. You know, it's like she stuck to it for that long, and it's like she's amazing. She's a wonderful woman. You know, great mom, two kids and all that, but she's a wonderful woman, very Christian woman. And I admire her very much for it, but the point is I shouldn't. Not because she isn't worth it, because she is. She is, you know, like I said, a lovely woman, and I wish her all the best in her life. But she should be the norm, not the exception. Should be that all the women are out there saying, "Nuh-uh, put a ring on it. You don't give me that wedding. You don't see me in that white dress. You don't see me out of that white dress." You know, we don't need to be going, "Oh, wow, virgin, that's weird." We need to be going, "Oh, wow, not a virgin, what's wrong with you?" That's the way it should be. It should be that we should be appalled by those that aren't, and not mystified by those who are. You know, and our world goes along. We have this thing like friends with benefits. It's a phrase that just blows me up. Because it indicates our relaxed morals and lackadaisical view on sexual relationships. The world tells us to have sex, to have fun, and to hell with the consequences. Live for today and let tomorrow worry for itself. Don't pay attention to the morals our parents and grandparents are trying to teach us. Don't pay attention to some stodgy old book like the Bible that goes against your idea of living for the moment. Serve yourself first, serve your pleasures first, do what feels good, conform to sin, wallow in it, and recant on your deathbed. These are the things the world is whispering to us, and it's leading us down a path to hell. I am so tired of living in a society where sex is considered worthless and meaningless. You know, sex is considered powerful in a way that we're going to talk about in just a second, but sex is a meaningful act, not in our society. No, really, society really does devalue sex to the point where it's nothing more than a physical act, a release. Nothing more than an animalistic hedonism being fed. Sex is taken from something that's intimate and emotional and even spiritual, a bonding act between two people that have developed a deep love for each other and cheapened it down to, oh, a physical release, you know, the making the endorphins or whatever they call them, your brain go off for a few seconds just from the physical release of the actual mechanics. You know, you have sex, you get that sexual gratification, I guess that's how I want to put it there. And, you know, there's nothing deeper to it. It's just that. That's it, and there's nothing more to it. But that's not true. You know, sex is the ultimate conclusion to the process of falling in love. Sex is devotion written in flesh. Sex is an act you partake in, a ritual, in a way, to speak of your love. It's bonding. It is a bonding moment with another person. We live in a world that takes this intensely personal and emotional act and sullies it by dragging it through the mud and tossing it away as though it's nothing. Sex has become a hobby, a time waster, and a cheap substitute for true intimacy. It has become to be nothing, something that's treated as common and profane, when it is truly in its natural state, in godly state, deep and meaningful. It speaks. Sex speaks. What it says depends on how you act with it. In fact, though, even though we said a minute ago that the society gives sex power, well, it does dismiss the important aspects of sex as a act between a man and wife, husband and wife, as this, you know, meaningful, you know, thing that happens between these married people, and cheapens it, right? So we talked about that. But it does acknowledge the power society does, that is, acknowledge the power of the sexual act in general. And I think we need to think about this more because it's important. You know, sex wields power. It is common to hear people in our lives talking about how they think having sex will alter a relationship. A common thread in life, and even the media, is that people don't want to have sex with another person because they're afraid it will change everything in the relationship. You see it in storylines and TV shows and movies. Oh, if we have sex, you know, I don't think we'll be friends anymore. It'll ruin our friendship or what have you. Well, guess what? The assumption, this assumption that sex wields this kind of power? Hey, it's true. It is absolutely 100% true. Sex is powerful. Sex does change a relationship, and it changes it permanently. That is why it must be treated with respect, because it creates lasting bonds. It can make a friendship become nothing by misuse. Or it can seal in a lifelong love, as it does in the confines of the marriage bed. When two people have nurtured a love for each other through godly courtship and proper dating, which is not having sex before marriage, taking care of business as God has dictated and deemed, keeping God-centered in your relationship, doing all those things, doing it right, you know, actually falling in love the correct way and not falling into lust, you know, two people, when they do that, are preparing themselves for the important changes that come with sex, and the act ends up enhancing their relationship. When two people have sex with nothing more than lust in their hearts, the bond isn't formed right. It's not meant to exist in that situation. And it causes disaster. So that's where we have a problem. We have sex as being this game changer. And it is a game changer. And you prepare for it. You train for it. That's what dating and courtship is all about. Training for sex. Training for love. Training for a lifetime together. To see if this is the one that you want to put the seal on. This is the one you want to make the deal with. And if it is the one you want to make the deal with, and they feel the same way about you, then you're ready for the sexual change that's going to happen. Your relationship is not going to go haywire because of it. You know, there may be small exceptions to every rule, but for the most part, when you do sex right, it's not going to be, you know, something that goes, oh, you're not going to be sitting there on your wedding night going, oh, I hope we can be friends afterwards, because you know you have a relationship built on more than just that. If you're worried about how it's going to change your relationship, you don't have a strong enough relationship to be having sex. That's why it's supposed to be after courtship, after dating. I know courtship is an old-timey word, but the principle applies even today. After proper dating, after a godly dating session, you know, or experience that leads to marriage, that's when sex is properly executed. And that's when it's going to enhance the relationship and lift it up, because it's a next natural step in the evolution of the marriage. You know, you meet, you date, you engage, you get married, you have sex, you have kids, you retire, you die. That's how it goes, right? Kind of generally. So we have that kind of issue, and that's why sex is what it is, because it's a step in this thing, but you gotta take the steps before it, or else you're gonna mess it all up. You know, you ever try to jump from one stair one to stair 10 without touching the stair in between? You're gonna fall on your butt. You're gonna go crashing down those stairs, ain't gonna do anybody no good, you're gonna hurt yourself. It may hurt somebody else, may grab somebody else on the way down. You know, if somebody's walking beside you, you try this insane stunt, you may pull them down too, scar them up too. That's sex. You're jumping steps. You got to take it one at a time. And that's where sex has a proper place in our life. It's in the steps of marriage. So you can't go doing that. It's like putting the roof up before you build the house. You're going to do any good. It's all going to collapse down and you're going to have problems. It's all going to be messed up. But society's telling us, just do what you want. Well, how stupid is that? How do we live in a society that's so stupid as to tell us, let's do something as stupid as, putting the cart before the horse. That's ridiculous, folks. We have to do this in the right order. And the right order is presented to us by God. God says, do this, 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 and this, and then you can do that. And that's how it works. So let's take care of that. So society is teaching us to wave our guns in the air, fire them off randomly, to visit our gun metaphor once again. And where's the sanity in that? Where in the world did we get the idea we can take something so important and treat it so badly? Excuse me. It's fun to shoot the gun. But man, I don't want to be responsible for accidentally shooting someone in the keister. Or shooting myself in the foot. Or anything else. So we definitely got to watch out what we're doing. In conclusion, we must come to understand that sex is good. Sex is proper. And sex is acceptable to God. As long as we follow the rules. Use sex for what it's meant to be. A bonding exercise between a loving husband and wife. Don't share your box of chocolates with just anyone. And take care of yourself. And you will be blessed for it. Y'all email me with your opinions. Tell me how wrong I am, how crazy I am. Love to hear from you guys. SmartFaithPodcast@yahoo.com. And until next time, my friends, God bless.